She's a real woman with a real life. She's someone you can relate to. Dawn Newton.
Welcome to the Dawn Newton Podcast. I am your host, Dawn Newton. My guest today is Richard Perkins Schoen. Richard promised his mother that he would complete her memoir. He spent 10 years editing and completing The Spring Flower, written by his mother, Jean Trenois Perkins. The three-volume memoir chronicles her life as a baby born unwanted during the 1931 Yangtze River flood. She was then adopted by medical missionaries, brought to the U.S. for a few years, then trapped in communist China. She was neither American nor Chinese enough, yearning for acceptance and a home her whole life. Her memoir, finished by her son Richard, is an eyewitness account of Chinese history and her own harrowing story.
Richard Perkins Schoen, it's such a pleasure to speak with you. We're talking today about your mother's memoir, but you helped finish this. You assisted bringing this to the covers. The title of the book is Spring Flower, A Tale of Two Rivers. Tell us about this. There's so many layers to the story. Your mother's story and yours as well. How did this come about for you that you finished her story? I know she passed, and I'm so sorry for your loss, but that was quite an undertaking.
Yeah, so foremost, thank you so much for having your show. Appreciate the opportunity to explain the stories. So I made a promise in early 2014 that I would. And so she had been battling dementia, fixed years altogether up to that point. She had been in a nursing home for about 10 years and hadn't responding to anyone for quite some time. And so whenever I visited her, I would have these monologues with her. And so I asked her that day why she would just leave and be tree on the other side or somewhere up in the sky. And then after a while, I asked her she finish her book. And so I said, I will do it only if you promise peace and retreats. And 3 months later, she died. She had understood me. And so I was happy for her, but I was left with this immense burden and a promise that I had no idea how to fulfill at the time.
We lost our mom to dementia. I know that journey. I am so sorry for your loss. You know, she was born, if I'm correct, born in 1931, and she was born unwanted. During the Yangtze River flood, she was adopted by medical missionaries. And I'm just kind of looking at the bullet points, but just, you know, reading she was born and how her parents responded to that and just the disappointment, devastation, the anger that came over both her, you know, her biological parents realizing that she was a female and just like, what do we do with her now? Where do we leave her? What do we do with her? That was a hard read. I can imagine as a son, even though we understand and we know the culture and at that time, that wasn't unusual or unreasonable response. But at the same time, when you're up close and personal, especially when it's your mother, realizing what she'd gone through, being unwanted and unloved, that was a hard read, I have to tell you, especially as a female and as a mother.
Right. I guess gender discriminatory practices are still ongoing even today. And this was back in the earlier part of the 20th century. And China actually had already improved tremendously. And I would give the credit to Western missionaries who actually helped raise the awareness of human rights, especially women's rights. So girls and women in the early part of the 20th century in China were able to receive education and maybe even choosing a career. But again, gender discriminatory practices in rural area continued, for example, the town. And so even without a great catastrophic Yangtze River flood, the odds were pretty much stacked against her because she was a girl. A baby girl. So yeah. So she didn't get off to a good start, say the least.
Well, and the role of the missionaries during that time, that was something there was not necessarily surprised about, but it was how communist China was and treating the people, but then allowing missionaries in, or how that work that they were able to provide assistance took your mother. Talk about that. That role of the missionary wasn't necessarily just a religious piece. The humanitarian piece was huge.
Right. I think the role of Western missionaries in Asia or Africa or South America had been misunderstood for good reason, because their presence has been inextricably tied to the sins of Western colonialism or Western imperialism. I'm not here to deny any wrongdoing by certain missionaries who had committed crimes against humanity during that era. I'm more talking about the side my mother experienced firsthand, and the side I have come to appreciate and learn while working down her memoir. I just use my American grandparents as an example. They definitely foremost were there to help because they're sincere, they're kind-hearted, and they're highly competent. My American grandfather was a surgeon, and my American grandmother would teach her and did a lot of teaching of young girls, young women in Papua High School, also a Sunday school. They were there to spread gospel. They had their mission, but they didn't thump the Bible on people's head or stuff it down people. They were foremost there to help, providing, you know, like what you said, humanitarian aid. They introduced modern medicine, built schools. This will go beyond my grandparents. My grandparents built a hospital in the town where my mother also. Again, their presence also helped raising the awareness of women's rights. Young girl.
Well, then just the journey your mom and then to America and becoming her life, you know, becoming an ophthalmologist, just her successful career to becoming a mother herself. When did you learn about her history, her plight, and her journey? Like, how old were you when that started happening?
That's a great question, because a lot of people told me I was literally shanghaied onto a plane, head to Tokyo, and later landed in JFK, New York. And it was during that journey my mother began to tell me her story, her past, and I was flabbergasted, because I didn't know my mom was actually, in many ways, American, and English was actually her first language. She began to speak English when she was about 10, 11 months old, and she was surrounded by Westerners and English-speaking people. And she even lived in Yonkers, New York during the wartime. And all I knew at the time that she was, she returned to U.S. and brought me with her early 1980s. I was about 14 years old. All I knew at that time that she was a brilliant ophthalmologist, a surgeon. And someone who was highly sought after by people as far away as a few hundred miles. So when she told me all of that, it was hard, difficult to digest, to say the least, yeah.
Oh, I can only imagine. It's, you know, because we look at, as kids, we just look as our parents, our mother, our father, that those roles as, that's just mom. You know, we take it for granted. We don't appreciate everything that they do. And then, especially at 14, you know, a teenager, you're coming into your own, and then you start hearing this story. It's like, wait a minute, who are you? I mean, short of almost a superhero in the eyes of a 14-year-old.
You hit the nail on the head. I had wondered. I have an older sister who is 6 years old, my senior. We both wondered who our maternal grandparents were. And we will ask those questions, and then it was just strange answers returned, and we had no idea what she was talking about. And it was also when I got older, I detected that my mom spoke Chinese in a funny way. And later I learned it was a bit of a Western or American accent that she was trying to hide.
Interesting. Did you ever meet your biological grandparents?
So on my father's side, yeah. On my mother's side, no. I never met them.
Now, did your mom ever return to her biological family, reunite in any way?
she met them at various times during 1950s and early 1960s before they too, my mother's biological parent, passed away. There were some connections or fleeting communications between them, no more than that.
It's just so fascinating. But also, I think about, you know, how she was raised, I guess, from the mom and me. It's like, well, did she get the nurturing and the compassion? And was she shown things? Was she, who was the female influence in her life and the male influence? And how was she, when did she realize at some point she was not wanted at birth? You know, and how did that, I guess, you know, how does that not mess with your psyche and how she saw herself? But also understanding how the culture was at that time as well. Does she ever talk about that?
Yeah, so... That's also another very good question. I didn't think anything about that until beginning working on her book. I think she might have been a little young, too small to actually remember some of the events that during the flood and leading up to when she was given birth option. And then I think in my American grandparents' home, she literally had about a good 12, 13, 14 years of childhood I will classify as a silver spoon or idyllic childhood. And then I think the living again in Yonkers, New York during the wartime further affirmed her identity as American. I think it was 1950 at the height of a Korean conflict, which was a proxy war between America and China. And then her American parents had to flee, and she was trapped and left behind because she was a few hundred miles away in college as a freshman, in English-speaking college as a freshman. And so that separation was devastating, I believe. And then she had to then say 30 years of her life in a country, in her birth country, technically her birth country, but living as a foreigner in that country, and then being totally separated. Never saw her American parents again, totally separated. America again. And also no idea when she would return to the U.S., a place that she actually called home. So I think all of that definitely did a number on her psyche, especially she was extremely close to her American mom. That bond was very clear while compiling her.
What was it like for you to pick up where she left off? Were you familiar and already in the know of what she had already written? Or was all of that kind of, or some of it, a surprise to you as well after her passing?
I will say I knew the gist of the story, but there were many stories, the details and eluded me, or I actually didn't care or didn't have time to care prior to before 2014.
Right.
And it did. So some things weren't a total shock to me, but there were stories that surprised me or if not shocked me. She left almost 1,000 pages of typed, handwritten manuscript plus notes, chapter heading, unfinished chapters and stories, and sometimes with a photograph stuck to a scotch tape to a piece of paper, and she will point to a face and talk about this person. And so all of that, again, I alluded to that, extremely daunting to me. Numerous times I regretted to ever making the promise. But it was interesting during this process. I found that actually my life in a multiple level actually mimicked my mother. So we were like mirror images of one another. But thankfully, of course, my life didn't go to the extremes that she experienced. So after reading what she had written, it almost felt like natural for me to A, keep her as the narrator of the story and not change it to me. And then because we share very similar voices and similar expressions and I got the same DNA flow through us. So it was challenging to try to tell her life, tell her stories through her eyes and mind, and yet I'm the one who had been writing it. So... But yeah, yet it was not no longer insurmountable challenge, but still challenging.
Oh, I kept moving. You're processing your grief and then just all of it, this whole journey, just what you did know. And then you start reading those pages, and that is a whole nother journey for, you know, a grieving son, the son of his mother who has passed. And what do you think your mom would think of the end result?
Well, I think the main theme or message for the book will be about one person's journey, maybe about her courage and resilience, but mostly about how she actually had the fortune of encountering some extraordinary people. I guess she and I both call them heroes and heroines of our life. So her memoir or her book is really to honor those people and to remember those people.
How has it changed you?
Oh, I had to retire early and essentially quit my teaching career. So that was a huge change because I could no longer fighting a two-front battle. This memoir took enormous amount of toll on me in terms of emotional, mental, and physical energy. But most interestingly, I had been devoted to teaching chemistry for a better part of 3 decades. And while that was feeling a rewarding, good thing to do overall, I had been very much tunnel visioned. I never looked up or looked around. Working on my mother's memoir forced me to look up and look around and learn enormous amount about this world and history, people. And funny, once I started to do that, I could no longer go back to what I was doing. It was very difficult anyway. So ultimately, I decided I would take the Suffolk from my life and accept it as my fate. Redemptive one, because it allows me to find all.
Yeah, and when you say that, it's going through our life, just doing the things that we do, doing our careers, our whatevers. And when you are approached and you take something like this on, that something that's so personal, it makes you have to feel. And we don't always like to take time to stop and do that.
And yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, that's so true.
It's like, oh, wow, I got feelings. I'm not going to deal with these things. I think it's a beautiful thing. And it's, you know, I can imagine the gratitude, that, you know, the grace that you have to show yourself. And even those people that, in essence, the villains in the story, the people that maybe we would call the perpetrators, or they're not so kind ones. But at the same time, we look at those things and we like, well, if it wasn't for those things, she wouldn't become the person she was or the mother she was to me, or just all of those things. There's just so much to process, you know, and then when you come kind of through it on the other side, that landscape, that view kind of changes a little bit. And sometimes there's an appreciation that I think we find ourselves being surprised at having that appreciation, if that makes sense.
I totally agree. So when I got thrown onto a plane and somehow find myself in the busy Midtown Manhattan, I thought that forever changed my life. But little did I know, after 40 years, the journey of completing her memoir once again changed my life. Yeah.
And what would you say is the takeaway? Like, who would you want reading this? And what's the overall message from your mother's story?
Yeah. So I think it would again be, the book is about people, extraordinary people she had the fortune of meeting and encountering, including those came later after this first volume. And I think, you know, she lived the turbulent life, right? That consisted of pretty much everything we know, natural disaster, MA disasters like genocide, which amounted to a tragedy. But I found working out her story through all of these extreme difficult moments, challenging moments, she seemed to have never lost hope. She had this childlike conviction that the world may be ingenuous, and then believing that things will work out in the end, that humanity will prevail ultimately. And even when things weren't going well and she was losing her steam or resources, there will be these people coming out of the woodwork to carry her the extra mile or go the distance. I mean, for example, she was born in a catastrophic river flood that killed upward of one of people. And then she fortunately met up with an American grandparent my medical missionary couple, and she was saved. But you can't convince her otherwise because she had just one too many stories like that. So I think that's the main message.
And it's interesting, too, because she had every reason, and it would have been a reasonable path or reaction on her part to come away incredibly bitter or damaged or traumatized. And not to say that she didn't have those feelings, because I'm sure she certainly did in some point. But the way that what she did with her life, I mean, even the title of the book, Spring Flower, was that her idea or was that your idea? Because that's interesting. But I think it's also so fitting, and it's telling of her outlook on life. And it's just fascinating to me when people are dealt a very rough hand and how some do go a darker path, or victims of abuse and some really atrocities, and others go a different direction, and what contributed to that. Your mom, as you said, had some earth angels that certainly crossed her path and helped her along the way.
I couldn't have said it better than you just summarized. Back to the point of the title, Spring Flower, that's what her middle name is. The middle name is Chen Hua. And so Spring Flower is a transliteration of her Chinese name. It was a Chinese name that given by her biological parent. She was born. And in those days, they named girls after some kind of flower. But her biological grandparent and her biological parents were experts on flowers. So they just decided to give her a generic one for Spring Flower. And so, so the editors and publishers thought that was an interesting phrase used as a title.
Yes. No, I agree completely. I think it's a beautiful title, actually, realizing what the parents were thinking when they named her. But yeah, from Western culture, it's like, that's not a bad name. It's like,
that's a really good name. Right? Yeah. A beautiful name,
actually. Yes. Yes. And so it is. It's depending on how you filter things, how you view things, where you come from culturally and all the others, that the way that we see something, that one sees treasure and one sees trash type of thing. It's that black and white of it. And I definitely see treasure. I mean, just in the story and allowing others to learn, step out of ourselves for a change, because I think everybody is so much in their own little bubble. And sometimes we're in a bubble just because of where we live and how we live, and not by any, not a sense of entitlement per se, but there's a lot of bubbles that have a lot of entitlement and self-absorbed that we don't ever stop and look outside of ourselves or the history. It sure gives you a whole new perspective and appreciation for where we are today in some aspects.
And I think if there is another message, would be the book actually echoes what's going on today, even in today's world.
Mm-hmm. It's funny in a very ironic kind of twisted way that's happening. Where can we find the book and learn more about the story? And, you know, if somebody wanted to interact with you or ask questions, where would you like us to go, Richard?
Books are available at Amazon.com, or the name will pop up. Barnes Noble also has them. And then I have a LinkedIn page named after myself, Richard Perkins Schoen. And then I have a website. Someone told me it has the world's longest name. Oh, I won't spell it out here.
Well, we'll link it when I get the interview posted and make sure people can find you.
Well, right.
I appreciate this opportunity, and thank you for sharing the story and completing your mother's story. That's we need more of that, and being able to walk in someone else's shoes and, you know, just be curious not only what her journey is, but what we're seeing today. It's very humbling. I appreciate that. Thank you for doing that, and thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Richard. I appreciate this time.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Don Newton Podcast, and a special thank you to my guest, Richard Perkins Schoen, joining us today discussing his mother's 3-volume memoir, Spring Flower. For more information about Richard and to find his books, richardperkinsschoen.com is the place to go. And be sure and check out my website, donnewton.com. The Don Newton Podcast is written, produced, and hosted by Don Newton. Oh,